and welcome to An Evening with Nirvana. It's a podcast where I talk to various guests from the Doom community about level design, map making, and content creation. Today on the podcast, I'm talking to Yukiro, perhaps best known for creating the Otex texture pack, as well as Map 32 of Eve Eternity, but he's also a longtime community member with solo mapping projects like Tantrum, Venom, and texture packs for Gothic DM and the Darkening series. Welcome to the podcast, Yukiro. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm doing really well. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Ready to go. Got some questions for you.
Mm-hmm. Got some answers for you. Hopefully.
Well yeah, you don't know. I could have some real bombshells to drop on you. You don't know.
Oh, wow. Well, we're going to, like, you've dug through my extensive Doom past and found the really juicy bits, I suppose.
I have, yeah. I'm gonna start off with a real hard-hitting question, which you won't be expecting, which is, how did you get into Doom?
So I first played Doom in January or February of 94, so it was quite a new game at the time. Mm-hmm. I actually know where I was in school, like outside of what classroom door I stood when this kid from like the parallel class came over to me with four floppies and he said, "I think you're going to like this." And that was Doom version 1.1, the full version. So I never got into like shareware first. So I started out with all three episodes pirated, granted, but you know, that was the start of it. And I had seen, you know, Wolfenstein before, but that didn't really impress me because I was also pretty into like the demo scene when you like graphics demos, when you code cool shit. And there was some stuff that was coming out in 93 that was, you know, full 3D texture mapped stuff, which sure, it isn't a game, so it's not interactive. So it can't really, it's unfair to compare Wolfenstein to it. But I had seen cooler shit on my screen than Wolfenstein. Mm-hmm. But Doom was just this whole other thing that just completely grabbed me, and now I'm here 30 years later almost, or 29 years later pretty much exactly, talking about it still. So I guess it had an impact.
Yeah, so you would have played, I mean, 94 you were playing the original Doom.
Yeah,
which of the IWADs for you was kind of the one that like impressed you the most, or the one that you were influenced by the most in your own stuff?
It's got to be the original. And by the way, so this is 1.1, and I didn't have an internet connection. So this other kid did. That's how he got a hold of it. So he downloaded it from somewhere. So I never upgraded, for example. So I always played. So 1.1 had the random pitch of sounds. So they pitch offset slightly, which you can do in the settings on most modern engines. It didn't have Nightmare. That got added later. And so on. And obviously episode 4 wasn't around because that came out in 95 to make it Ultimate Doom. So mm-hmm. The three episodes, the original Doom.Watt, that would be the IWAD that influenced me the most. Because by the time Doom 2 came around in 94, or that year, later that year, I had already started, you know, editing, and I was more interested in creating things than to play the game as such.
Mm-hmm. And so you're one of these people, I'm guessing, you played TNT and Plutonia, like, much later on.
I did, and I actually don't know that I've finished TNT. I think I at some point, scum saved my way through Plutonia. But TNT, so, well, this gets into a longer story, but I, having been around since then, since, like, the early days, and started mapping before Doom 2 was out, I got another kid gave me another floppy at school, and I remember where I was when I got that floppy too, like the gym class changing room. He pulled out a floppy disk and said, "This has a Doom editor on it." And I think it was like a cover disk from some magazine. And this must have been like right before school was out in 94. So it might have been DEU 5.21, because that came out in late May. So that could have been it. I'm not sure. But so I started editing then, trying to figure out how to even construct levels, because as you've talked about extensively on this pod, like the editors were not exactly intuitive. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of documentation about the format and so on. But so I was doing that, and then there were, you know, you would try to get a hold of other levels. Again, I didn't have an internet connection, but we would like share floppies with each other and so on at school. And then Team TNT came up and sort of had this, they sort of carried themselves like they were the gods of Doom. They were very sort of braggadocious, and like their website was like very chest thumping and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I thought their output didn't live up to that. And that sort of got completely out of hand when it picked up. I mean, we're jumping now to 96, obviously, but when it picked up TNT for an actual commercial release as Final Doom and then Plutonia as well, that they just, it just got worse. And I'm sort of judging them all broadly here, but there were some individuals in that team that were obnoxiously sort of
yeah,
braggadocious and like claiming that, you know, the rest of you chumps aren't getting a commercial release, you suck. Like that was the attitude, and I hated that so much. So I always had a thorn in my side to TNT stuff.
Right.
Not quite to Plutonia, because the Casale brothers had been on Memento Mori before.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were sort of not fully of that team. So
yeah,
but yeah, that definitely Doom.wad was my favorite. Obviously, for as soon as Doom 2 was out, that's what you mapped for, because Super Shotgun, Megasphere, Archviles, Revenants, you know, the lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Dario sort of had his own thoughts on TNT and the group of mappers and stuff as well. Maybe, I'm not sure of the specifics, but he there's definitely that sort of same feeling when he talked about TNT.
And I will say that, I mean, it was largely people from the TNT group that created Boom. So good stuff came out of that. It's just that had a chip on my shoulder, because I felt like what I had done in like 95 was just better than what they were doing. Rightfully or not, but that was sort of how I felt. And they were like getting the attention, and, you know, I just felt that it was bullshit. So I was kind of anti-TNT.
Mm-hmm. And I have your, like, first WOD, quote-unquote, listed as 1996, I think, on the Doom Wiki. But where were these other, like,
well, so if you open that, that would be Tantrum.
Yep.
But the date stamp on the WOD is November of 95. So that wasn't when it was done, because I didn't know about the id Games archive, so I never uploaded it.
Okay, right.
So this was done, it was created in the fall of 95. And, well, actually, when I started mapping in 94, the PC that we had at home was a 386, 16 megahertz. And if that doesn't tell you much, you young ones listening, mm-hmm. it basically ran Doom at 2 FPS full screen.
Yeah.
But you know how you can, like, the toggle for, you know, status bar or not, if you go the other way, like, you shrink the window. That was a part of the original engine, so that it would render fewer pixels and get decent frame rates on lesser hardware. If I went down to the absolute minimum, I was like, I got, you know, 20-25 FPS, but you wouldn't see shit. But so because of that, because I couldn't play, like, there was no point trying to participate in actual gameplay. I was just sightseeing. Like, I found out about the cheats, and like I would just walk around and like look at these things and marvel at how this could exist. So like just the atmosphere of the environments and the textures, obviously, which I'm assuming we'll get to. Like all of that, I just took that in. So it was more, again, like those the demo scene, graphics demos, it was more of like a graphics demo to me. I was just marveling at the technology that could summon these spaces into existence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I wanted to build as well. I just wanted to craft environments that I could be inside of. I just thought that was the coolest thing. So I would map on that PC. And then a friend of mine, a girl who's 1 year older, Michaela, she had a 486, 66 megahertz. So that one was just blazing fast, and you would hit 35 FPS, which was the sort of limit for vanilla Doom. So I would bring floppies over to her place and watch, and her and her friends would like play it and I watched. So I wouldn't play my own levels when they were watching. Like I would like boot it up and they would have to figure it out, and I was like watching over their shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually have I was rummaging through my dad's basement this summer, and I found a bunch of floppies that I think might have ESO levels on them. However, this being 2023, I don't have a floppy drive. Right. So I haven't been able to look yet for the last like 7 months. But I need to get one of those USB drives, because if they're salvageable, because disks, they're, I mean, magnetic storage, they deteriorate. And this is a long time ago. But if they're salvageable, it would be kind of neat to see those things again. I assure you they're terrible. But well, but yeah.
First stuff always but tends then, to be. But I mean, I've talked to a few people on here who've sort of taken their old stuff and made it into, like, updated it and done stuff with it, which is kind of a fun idea to, like, come back to that stuff.
Well, it kind of is, and there is a tantrum too, regrettably, and maybe we'll get to why that exists, but yeah. I don't think these are salvageable. These were, like, these, you know, learning steps. Like, it's, I remember one, for example, where there's an elevator that takes 2 minutes, because I made it as tall as possible.
Nice.
Maybe not 2 minutes, but like super tall. And I just thought that was hilarious. Like all the stupid shit that kids do. And I mean, I made Tantrum in 95. I was 16 at the time. So I'm born in 79. So I was a kid in a way. But then what got me from those stupid early experiments was in part the editor Edmap. I think that was a lot more intuitive for me. And I was able to do better things, and then just learning about the format, because I mean, this is before the source code was out, and like people didn't really know how Doom worked, so they were trying to like decipher that and reverse engineer that. And so there was this document called the Unofficial Doom Specs, which you can still find online, that sort of, they had done a bunch of tests, like what is the steepest stairs a revenant can walk up, what about an arachnotron, etc., and it, like it was all documented, and what is the minimum space the player will fit through, like all of these things were sort of laid out in there, and like what are all the things that exist in Doom and how do they work and what are the properties, and you know, from anything from enemies to textures to like how map data was stored. So I had that, the Unofficial Doom Specs, I had that printed out, and I just took notes in the margin. I would study that, and I would try to build things. And so once that document was starting to be kind of complete, I think in late 94, and editors got better, I could do better things.
Yeah.
But the real trigger for Tantrum was when the first screenshots from Quake were released, I think in August of 95. Because there's one in particular called q16.tiff. Like I remember the file name, that showed better than I think than the other screenshots, and it was also double resolution, 640 by 400, so quadruple the amount of pixels that Doom had, and it showed better than the other shots, the soft shadowing of lighting, and I was like, I need that. So I tried to do faded lights in Doom by using multiple sectors and stepping the light levels, which weirdly hadn't been done before. At least to my knowledge, I don't think anyone else had done that. And that was part of what got a lot of attention to Tantrum when it was finally released, that the lighting was sort of very interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
it so is... that was what drove it, the level, basically, the Quake screenshots.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is, yeah, fairly sophisticated, I thought, visually for 1996.
And was, even 95 then, because it was, yeah, it was made in 95.
Yeah, for 95, yeah.
And but, because I had sent it around, so people played it in 95, it just wasn't on id Games. So I had shared the file to a bunch of people, so it was sort of a known entity in the, what was the Doom community at the time.
Mm-hmm. So that was Tantrum, which was like a single map that you made yourself, and then later you joined the Telosian incident. How did you get involved in that project,
well,
and what made you want to?
There's
sort of...
even a bit of story in between, because some of the people that I had sent Tantrum to were the Innocent Crew, or Tick, because I'd played something they made called Obtick. Mm-hmm. Which is not quite a mega wad. I don't remember how many levels there are. But it's got some dehacked stuff in it, and it's got some pretty cool levels. And I sent it to them, and they were like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, we're just wrapping up a project called Memento Mori, but you want to be, we want to make, do you want to make map one for the sequel? So I was offered to do map one for Memento Mori 2, because Memento Mori 1 came out in like December of 95. And of course, that was like a great honor. But then I had received all this praise for Tantrum from the people I sent it to. So I sort of just ran headfirst into Mapper's Block, thinking like, oh, I'm going to need to outdo that. And I just had no ideas. And also because I wasn't like actively playing the game, I was only designing spaces. Like if you've played Tantrum, it's terrible gameplay wise. No one should do that. Just no monsters and look at the views. That's what you should do. But like, I couldn't come up with anything for Memento Mori. So I don't remember. Maybe it was Thomas that ended up like making map one, where there's a 3x3 grid of flats that form a pentagram. And like that was the sort of, they wanted a spectacular first view. Like when you first loaded it up, it should like wow the player, the very first sort of vista. And I just completely locked up trying to achieve that and ended up not providing a level. And that kind of stuck, like I kept being stuck trying to map. But you know, I was participating on IRC chat channels and Usenet and stuff like that. So I was like involved and people had seen Tantrum and knew about it and, you know, knew about me. And so I got these very sort of people would approach me to participate in things. And I somehow ended up in Talusian Incident. But again, I didn't. I was supposed to make at least one level all on my own, but it ended up be a single collaborative level where mm-hmm. I made probably less than half. Again, because I just this complete Mapper's Block. I'd sort of convoluted myself into thinking I had to make this magnum opus right away.
Right. And what was it like having to collaborate with somebody when you, I guess you were probably more used to just making stuff on your own at this point? Was it like a positive experience? Did you learn stuff from that? Or did you
I think
feel
it was
like
it was positive because someone would like nudge the map forward when I was completely locked up and I was like overthinking everything and like couldn't draw a single line. Like it's a real problematic like psychological state to be in. So it helps that someone else, you know, adds something. There were technical limitations. You couldn't like take one area and copy and paste it into another map. I don't think any editor had a proper copy and paste at the time. So you would send the level and have to wait until someone built something and you have to build it in that level. You can't just do it in modules. So it was a slow process, especially if you wanted to go back and forth. It's easier if it's, you know, someone does something, abandons it, and someone else completes it. But I recall this was probably a bit back and forth because I still had the ambition that I should do more. So like, oh, let me have a go at it, and, you know, and then nothing happened again.
Mm-hmm. So after this, at least according to the Doom Wiki, but it seems like there was a bit of a gap where you didn't actually map. And instead, in 98, you made textures for a world called The Darkening. Was this your first time creating textures for Doom?
No. I started in 97, and actually made textures for Mordeth Episode 3, which is still not out. So those textures are still somewhere
that is pretty funny.
On a hard drive in the Netherlands. But so that's actually probably the earliest ones. Doom World head honcho Linguisa, Andrew Stein, when I released Otex, he dug up an old Usenet post from a couple of days after Doom's source code was released, where I wrote quite passionately, and I guess I was 18 at the time, that, you know, there should also be a new set of textures. Like if we can spice up the engine and so on, we're going to need new textures because the current ones have been sort of done to death. That's what I thought at 97, you know, people are doing interesting things with them still today, but that's how I felt. And I guess that what I had sort of thought that, I should probably be the one to make this set. Like the embryo of that idea already existed. It's just mm-hmm. that, you know, it took another, you know, what, 21 years until Otex came out. I don't even remember what the question was, but I was around the whole time. And I was doing things and I was like starting on collaborative projects and I probably dropped out of more stuff that I forget now. But then just because stuff also came out in 98 doesn't mean it all was made in 98. And The Darkening Episode 1, I think I don't even know if I made any textures. I think it was like title graphics and some other stuff. But before Darkening Episode 1 was even out, we had started on Episode 2. And so I started making textures for Episode 2, and I probably started that around 97 as well.
Mm-hmm. And what was, I guess, what was your process like back then for making textures for something like that? Were you, like, researching things specifically to get a certain theme for the ward, or how did that work?
Well, it's hard to remember. I mean, this is so long ago. Yeah. I had bought Photoshop version 3.0.5, like a student license, I think in 96. Yeah, I probably came out in 96. Because I was interested in a lot of things. Like, I was interested in typography. I've drawn lots of fonts. And I was, you know, interested in graphics. I was interested in, you know, well, building levels and so on. So it was a whole range of stuff. So I wasn't, you know, at the time very sure that, you know, I want to do this. Like, I want to commit to this, and this is one I want to be doing in another 30 years. I had no idea about any of that. So I guess I just was curious to see if I could make something. Like, how hard can it be? And, you know, you, as playing with this new software that I bought, and you know, combining that with a game that I liked, and I just try to do stuff. And just trying to, like, look at it and go, how could this be better? Or why isn't this feeling right? Or, you know, stuff like that. And obviously looking very long and hard at the existing, the sort of IWOD textures, and really trying to figure out what made them good or bad. Mm-hmm. And by the way, also, you know, looking at all the sort of community crafted stuff that was coming out, and I felt like, I could do better than that. That was probably the biggest factor, seeing shitty textures in PWODs and thinking, Someone needs to do this better. And I don't think I have, like, a particular talent for this. I'm just very critical of my own work, which is also why it took 20 years to make a proper texture one. Because I will do stuff and just go, not working, and then just toss it out and start over. And I guess I'm more patient than anything. So patience over talent. And that's basically the process. I just wanted stuff to look good. Wanted to see more stuff in Doom.
Yeah. And so what about the Gothic Deathmatch texture pack? It's been used by, I think, Behemoth, by Scotty use it. There's textures used from Sunlust. I think you didn't do all the textures for it. It was a joint thing.
So Anthony Sherwanka, or Adelution, or Adel for short, he did most of it, and that's a lot of Frankenstein textures. He was really good at digging out stuff from other games and just Frankensteining stuff together. Mm-hmm. He had a really good eye for that, but he also wasn't, like, an artist in the traditional sense. He would just, he needed these to exist, and he found a way to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And so I also did some edits for it, and I did some stuff from the ground up for it. And I don't even remember how I got involved. I think I might have reached out to him or someone else on the team after Gothic DM1, because I got involved for Gothic DM2, and I actually made a level for Gothic DM2, but it got rejected. Rightfully, it was pretty terrible. Like, it wasn't up to par for what everyone else was doing. So instead, I ended up helping out with textures, and I guess that just also cemented a little bit more that I should probably go the texture route, because I get stuff done a little bit more than for levels, and B, you can do just one or two small things and they're still usable. You don't need to complete a whole thing like you need with a level.
Mm-hmm. And with a texture pack like this, where maybe it's a little bit more specific in its theme, was this still just trial and error of, like, using the software and figuring out what looks good, or was there, like, a bit of research involved for this one, or were you bouncing ideas off Anthony?
Not as much research at that point. I was more just looking at other in-game textures. Like, for example, if you have some rusty girder type thing with rivets on it, and you need a vertical version, and most people would rotate it 90 degrees and be done. However, that means the fake sort of drop shadow on the rivets now goes to the side and not down. Mm-hmm. And I always hated that with a passion. I thought that was terrible. You need to rotate every individual rivet or do it right so that the shadow is always correct, like on the texture. So I would really obsess over details like that and sort of internalize all those kinds of things that I saw for how to do beveling and edges and like how to like what how much noise is too much noise. Because obviously one of the really compelling things about Doom is was one of the first games that had photo sourced material for textures and for graphics in general. Mm-hmm. Up until that point, pretty much everything was hand pixeled because digital cameras weren't really a thing. So you didn't have a very easy way to get, you know, real world stuff into or digitize and into an image editor. But with Doom, that added, and because Doom was made by people who had a lot of experience doing pixel art, it was photographic sources managed by people who knew their craft. So they would take photographic sources and they would treat them right and like make sure to tune the contrast to be right and tune the noise to be right, mostly. I mean, the Cement series are a little bit noisy for my taste and so on. But that, I think, is what makes the magic. Like the grit of Doom, especially when it came out, that was just mind-blowing. I had never seen anything like that. It was just above and beyond anything else in terms of mood. Obviously, the diminishing light in the distance, all of that stuff also helped, but the textures were a huge part of that and how they were made. So I wanted to recreate that and wanted to sort of distill that vibe. So I obsessed a lot about how that was achieved and how much is too much of everything and so on. And I certainly did not, you know, hit the sweet spot initially. The Darkening Episode 2 textures, I don't think are super good at this point. They were ambitious for their time, but I, yeah, that was, I didn't quite know what I was doing at the time.
Mm-hmm. So I guess like we'll get into the specifics of Vertex a bit later on, I guess, but I was curious, like, for actually the process of making the textures, how has that changed from back then compared to like working with Vertex? Like, what are the major differences?
Not a whole lot of differences, which is probably bad because there are modern tools that would make a lot of things a lot easier. If mm-hmm. anyone wants to learn to create textures for games today, and it doesn't have to be like physically based rendering stuff like PBR textures with several maps like normal and specular, it can just be like Doom. Like if you want to make anything like this, you should probably learn, well, buy and learn Substance Designer. Now acquired by Adobe. I do everything in Photoshop. The original Doom was done in Deluxe Paint. So I've stepped up from what was used then, but I still do everything in Photoshop. I own a license of Substance Designer. I just haven't gotten around to learn it a lot yet. There will be updates to Otex that use a Substance Designer derived imagery, but for the most part, it's Photoshop. And so in high school, I had a teacher who owned a very early digital camera. So in 97, I think, I got to borrow that, and I went out and took pictures of brick walls around school. Mm-hmm. And one of them ended up in Overload Death Matches that came out in 98, and that one still exists, but under a different name in Otex. So that's probably the oldest one. So that's the process that I've kept doing. And I just take photos of stuff that looks cool, either as a reference or to use as a source. And I just hoard it. I have gigabytes of stuff on my disk that were just images I've taken for the purpose of making textures of throughout the last, you know, 25 years.
Yeah, it's interesting that so early on you already had an idea of I guess like what the process should be and what was unique about Doom and what made their textures work better than other games at the time and stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't that I had some clairvoyant insight to this. It's just that I was so taken by Doom and the mood. And I just wanted to be able to do things like that. And in order to do so, I needed to understand what the magic was made of. So I just, that's just how I try to unravel it, and quite slowly learned what were the components. And also from, I think, 95 or 96, a lot of people at id started like posting updates about stuff in what's called finger files. So you could see online, this is some sort of very sort of rudimentary proto blog. They each had their own file. Not everyone updated, but you could read stuff about what they were doing. And I would read those religiously. And, you know, the ones from John Carmack, you wouldn't understand every fifth word maybe, but from other people, you would, you know, be able to glean a detail every now and then. And I was just compulsively ingesting all of that in the 90s. So that also helped. Like I guess I have a tendency to become intensely obsessed with things, and that's just what happened with textures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm similar, although I become very obsessive for like periods of time, and then I'll just completely drop the thing and do something else afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's a bipolar diagnosis lurking in the shadows here, but yeah. And I mean, you've talked to other guests too about, like, you know, having a hiatus from Doom. And I mean, sure, in ways I have, but not really from textures. Like, I've always kept collecting imagery. I never stopped.
Mm-hmm. So you sort of, according to the timeline that I'm attempting to construct, it seems like you...
That I'm skipping around inside of, despite your best efforts.
It seems like you came back to mapping... with Venom. Was that the first thing that you sort of came back to mapping after a bit of a break and doing texture work?
Well, so I don't remember who mentioned this on your pod, but Malcolm Saylor, who did the Cord series of levels, he was also working on the Telosian incident. Mm-hmm. And he might have been even younger than me, but he had a really fascinating eye for constructing spaces. And that really... And using lighting, that caught my eye a whole lot. And he did, I don't remember which one it is, if it's Chord 3 or something. One of his Chord series levels was like a lot of marble. And I saw that and went, I need to make another level. And Venom didn't end up looking like that at all. I don't think Venom is a particularly good level. It's quite linear. It's entirely linear, I think. Which I think I even mentioned in the text file and like apologize for up front that it's very linear. And again, I never became really a player of Doom because of that start on that very slow computer. I was more a sightseer of Doom. Mm-hmm. So again, gameplay suffers, but I was trying, like I forced myself to, out of scraps and old ideas, like bundle together a level to put out just to have something. It took a very long time to do. That probably has parts in it. That's from 97 at least.
Right.
That was just to like get out of also the multiple year long mapper's block that I was sort of suffering under. Because I felt ever since, you know, Tantrum in 95 again, that, you know, I have it in me to do these things, but that never manifested. And I hated that. That it turned... My love for the game turned into, it got painful, you know, because I wanted so badly to make stuff for Doom, but I had sort of tied myself into a knot, trying to live up to the promise I had shown early on.
Well, around the same time of Venom, I think Tantrum 2 got released, which you said was regrettable earlier on. I guess I was curious because it's sort of like a tuned up, more difficult, version of the original, you starting to get to a point where you were getting better as a player and wanted to challenge yourself, or what was the reason for making
this film? I think, Hell Revealed had come out. It's not from 97, I think. So there was this sort of, the zeitgeist was sort of difficult levels and how can this even be done? Like that had started to be a thing. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of early stuff doesn't even touch that. It can be difficult, but it's not like... deliberately challenging in the way people make things now. You're not catering to specific player skills and so on. That wasn't really a thing. Yeah. So I guess it was the just the spirit of the times that I wanted to make it more difficult. And it was also, again, an attempt to like tackle my way out of Mapper's Block by just, all right, I'll just tune up this thing. This exists, but, you know, I'll just make changes. And that it's better than starting from a blank canvas, because the blank canvas like stared back at me into my empty soul and I couldn't take it. So it was a sort of a cheap way of getting something out there.
Mm-hmm. And was that the part that was regrettable to you, the cheapness of it?
I mean, yeah, I feel like I had it in me to do something much better than that. It's just that it didn't happen. So I just wish I would have found a way to like set aside the Mapper's Block thing and navigate through that through other means, and build something more novel. Like, I think there's this sense of wasted potential and like wasted opportunity with that.
Mm-hmm. So after this, what made you want to make deathmatch maps for the Overlord?
Because they're so tiny and it's so like the pressure is off, and so the idea with Overlord is to make one versus one deathmatch maps, because a lot of them are like a little bit bigger, might suit three or four, but we wanted to make one versus one and just make them really tight, and so it's just absolutely frantic, like stroboscopic pacing of these levels, because that it just felt like a fun thing to do, and there weren't many like that, and it was easy to make them bite-sized. They're super tiny and you could just make some symmetrical thing and place some guns and off you go. Mm-hmm. And I got to fiddle with some textures, and you know, there's some recolors, but there's some novel stuff in there as well. So that's that was sort of the whole idea, and this was done in 98, the year I graduated high school, and a couple of younger kids, they're 2 years younger than me, lived in the same tiny backwoods, middle of nowhere shit town. We got together and did this, and we actually had the computers in one room, so we would play each other and then make adjustments. And like it was a whole lot of fun to do it collaboratively and not just sit there on your own and suffer staring at the empty editor. So that was a lot of fun just to do that and actually do a lot of playing as well. Mm-hmm. That one has demos in it, so if you for version 1.9, so if you just let it autoplay, there are three demos in there where we're playing.
Oh, that's cool. And did this help a lot with your Mapper's Block then at the time?
I don't know if that one did. I think there was some other... I think I just eventually found or sort of constructed for myself the mental tools to deal with it. And part of it was also like the release of Quake 2. And I just thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And that spurred me even more, just as Tantrum had been spurred by the very first screenshots of Quake 1. And obviously there's a bunch of parallels between Darkening Episode 2 and sort of this Quake 2 aesthetics in there. Mm-hmm. Not up to par, obviously. The Quake 2 textures are probably the best 8-bit color palette textures ever made for any game in the history of mankind. Like, it is, the craft is just absolutely insane. I still gaze at them. Like, I had them open in Slade the other day. Like, it's still... you know, the holy grail of textures. So that got super inspiring. And then having been adjacent to the team on Darkening Episode 1, but not mapping for it, I don't remember if I was supposed to or not. And maybe I started something, but I was too late or something. But then for Episode 2, so Episode 1 had been led by Jan van der Weken, a Belgian guy. And I think, and he has made a lot of like E1 replacement stuff. Uh-huh. And I think he is the god of E1 aesthetics. If, like, old-timers like myself often consider E1 of Doom like quintessential Doom. That's because that's the shareware episode. That's what you spend countless hours inside of. And I think Jan is the one person that has captured that the best. I think his sense of, like, gameplay, atmosphere, architecture, proportions, flow, of E1 style Doom is better than anyone on the planet. And he was, and I was so inspired by that. And I wanted to be able to craft spaces like that, because I had spent a lot of time in E1. And again, this sort of sightseeing mentality of just being inside of these places and then being inside of his places also felt super inspiring in the same way. So I wanted to aspire to that. So I did a bunch of stuff where I actually tried to recreate his stuff from memory. And obviously you get a bunch of things wrong, and eventually, you know, it turns into something that is entirely mine and not derivative of his. And that's largely how my levels for Darkening Episode 2 came about.
Mm-hmm. And they, I guess, like, playing through them, they're quite a bit larger in scope than your single map things like Venom and Tantrum. What were sort of the goals for this as a sequel? Because you said it was being made like essentially the same time as the first one.
At least overlap. Because I remember, I mean, I think Darkening Episode 1, did that come out in like 98? But like in the, or even 99, because in the winter of 98, 99, I know I was working on Episode 2. There's also, and I try to find it ahead of this pod, but I couldn't, but there's an IRC log where I'm on the Quake IRC channel and John Romero shows up, and I end up talking about Darkening Episode 2 with John Romero.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think from 98, late 98. So it was already going, but it didn't come out until March of 2000 and then got updated later that year. Right. Now I've forgotten the question again. Sorry.
Just if there were any goals for it as a sequel in terms of like improving upon the original and stuff.
Not really. We were just like, we're sticking with, you know, we didn't want to go the Boom route. That didn't feel pure. And also because Jan had been leading the team for episode 1, but he wanted to step back for episode 2. And he did midway through development. So he actually started out leading episode 2, but then he didn't feel he had the inspiration and time. So he stepped away from it. And I took over, and I was also doing the textures anyway, so I was pretty central to it anyway. And I guess we just, in the spirit of what he was doing, which was truly classic Doom, like E1 Doom, we wanted it to be kind of classic, so no Boom stuff, so we stuck to vanilla limits. And there had been some neat tricks. So the Darkening Episode 2 uses, for example, one thing where you have bright ceilings, but the floor is not lit up.
Mm-hmm.
But in vanilla, and we have, there's even at one point, I don't remember what level, but there's like you step onto a crate and then you lower it down, and it's like all mid-techs and fake floors, and there's a bunch of stuff like that and fake bridges and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we were, you know, trying to push vanilla. That was one thing, and then we obviously had gone towards this sort of tech theme. There's more like vaguely gothic stuff in episode 1. So I don't know that there was anything in particular. I think the story is basically a clone of Quake 2. You crash on a distant planet and you need to figure out where to go. Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Quake influences in that there's, you know, writing on the walls, but it's with some alien alphabet and you can't understand what it says. Like, you're on this alien world. It's very Quake 2 derived. So that was basically what we were doing.
Right. And I guess, like, for me, when looking at the maps that you made and also the texture work, it does feel like there's sort of maybe the beginnings of Otex-y themes and also the structuring of, like, your Eve Eternity wood in the sense of the scale of the complexes and just sort of the general layout. And the way the stuff's built. Was this one sort of an important step in discovering your style of mapping, do you think?
100%. And especially map 12 of Darkening Episode 2, which is the last single player map. A bit of a trivia here is that on id Games, it's actually, if you look at the folder structure, it's actually sorted under megawads. The cutoff is 16 levels, and we only have 12 single-player levels, but the rest are deathmatch levels. So they're technically, you know, I think 24 levels inside of the wad, which allows it to be classified as a megawad. We just felt, and that was deliberate so that we would get more attention, because people would pay more attention to megawads. But yeah, map 12, while, like, the ending is super underwhelming, stuff like that, it's very interconnected. It is sort of a sprawling space. You're left to figure stuff out on your own. Non-linear. You know, it's got a lot of the things that I had figured out at that time that I liked. And there is a level that came out later, but that it was done before Darkening Episode 2. But I didn't actually deliberately release any levels between then and Eternity, and that's an 18-year hiatus. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I did mapping, but none of that is released. Some of it is, because some of the stuff in Eternity Map 32 is scraps I made to test my textures, and then I just repurposed them for that level. But yeah, that I had sort of figured out at that point sort of what I enjoyed when I was in a Doom level. Again, like inhabiting the space, what do I want that to be like?
Mm-hmm. So you talked a little bit about how, like, Otex began as an idea. Do you remember, like, the very early stages of it? Like, when you actually started to work on it? Was it when you got that digital camera?
Well, there were a bunch of false starts, because after Darkening Episode 2... So, the Darkening Episode 2, the text file says you can't use these textures to make other WADs, because when it came out, I had already started making other textures that I felt were better. And I figured, you know what? I don't want people using this. They're going to get the good stuff soon. And also, to some extent, I wanted them to be exclusive to Darkening Episode 2 to set that apart and, like, to be that WAD that looks that way. Mm-hmm. And I had started on a bunch of other projects, several. I think pretty much all of them involved Derek McDonald, Afterglow. Like, he's been sort of a sidekick throughout my Doom career. And he still has a bunch of levels that uses old textures that I had made from previous packs that never came out. And that I don't always have equivalents in Otex, so he clings to these old ones. And they, you know, they have their charm, but I think their technical imperfections make me reluctant to release them standalone. Mm-hmm. He's obviously free to release these levels whenever he wants, But so there wasn't this one start for Otex, but I have continuously been dabbling with textures. But for a long time, they were texture packs like Darkening Episode 2 that were made for a specific mapping project.
Right.
So I guess the start was when I gave that up and figured, you know what? I'm just going to make a texture WAD. It's not going to have a specific project attached to it. And that was very freeing for me. That allowed me to just do the stuff I wanted, because otherwise you end up in this swamp of requests immediately. This one with brown, or this one but bigger bricks, or, you know, I need just some absurd request that I can't possibly fulfill because it's not in my sort of wheelhouse to do that type of design.
Yeah. And for Otex, was there any sort of planning stage? Did you know sort of what kind of textures you wanted in the pack? Was it designed to sort of emulate the original Doom texture?
There's so many different things. Like, Otex is so extensive that there isn't this singular purpose or singular idea behind it. Because mm-hmm. I think that an important sort of catalyst for Otex is YouTube and Twitch. Like, because I could, wherever I was, and usually, like, for between 2013 and 2018, I lived in the US and I was traveling a whole lot for work. And my computer was a Mac, so I wouldn't, like, it wasn't fun to play on, but I could always watch video wherever I was. And I would just consume so much Doom content. And I hadn't for a long time. And I actually look this up to see if I find it, because I didn't make a single post on Doomworld between 2009 and 2015. So the 6 years when I never posted anything.
Right.
But I was still making textures. But then I guess, yeah, 2013, 2014, I really started looking at a lot of Doom stuff, not as much playing, but looking. And I've always looked at speedrunning. I've always been a fan of that from the very, very beginning. I've been devouring, especially UV Max runs. I love watching that. And then Zero Master started, I don't remember when he started it, but the YouTube channel that is now dormant because it's all on Twitch now. But there was a YouTube channel when he would render out good recordings of records and just post as individual videos. I must have watched like 90% of that channel. I have watched so much of that because I wanted to just sort of immerse myself in Doom stuff, even if I couldn't play. And so I would see all of these projects using non-vanilla textures, and they might be just edits or you know, and it would just give me ideas. So, and then sometimes I would boot up the actual level when I had a moment in front of a PC, and often like just decide, okay, I need to make an equivalent of this. This is so good. It looked like this is such a good idea. The contrast between these two materials and the texture or these proportions of, you know, the pattern. And I can see how useful it is because it's so masterfully used in this level. And so I would look at, you know, Sunder, obviously, Sunlust, Disjunction, a lot of stuff. Like Disjunction in particular by Flodrand has a lot of rusty metal that I think is derived from Memento Mori 2, but that metal uses, there's a single index among all of the 256 color indices in the palette. There's one brown in particular that has a slightly more green sheen. Yeah. Like it isn't linear. Like the fall off of the ramp of the colors is sort of weird at the bottom end. So they don't really follow the same ramp. Exactly.
I think and I know this one you're talking about.
Yeah,
number two or something.
Yeah, I don't remember, but it was there was this one color that was dominant in a lot of the rusty metal that Flodrand used for Disjunction, and I just had to make textures with that. So I made sure to have that as a dominant color in some set that ended up in Odex. And then obviously there's stuff in that's vanilla that's very useful. That gets a lot of mileage, but I felt like it would be cool if you could use only Otex if you didn't have to use vanilla stuff to combine it with. So I would make my version and, you know, with some changes, but like something equivalent-ish in use. And so got a lot of stuff again, Sunlust projects like that. That stuff, just the stuff that looked good, but I wanted to make it, you know, my own. So that was a big factor, and then also. Just stuff I came up with. Obviously, it's nice to not have everything be derivative, so I try to come up with, you know, my own ideas.
Yeah. And could you talk a little bit about sort of working with the Doom palette and when you're making textures, how it's sort of helpful to the process and how it can hinder it as well?
Well, it takes a level of masochism to work with this palette because it is incredibly under-optimized. So there are seven duplicates. So from 256, you get a 249, useful colors. But then there are, I think, like 11 more that are extremely close to one other, to something else in the palette, that you can basically do away with and to no loss. And then, obviously, the default blues are maximally saturated, which is very hard to combine with anything else. And so on. So there, it's hard, but it is also that palette that provides the sense of grit that I love so much about Doom. And also, if you have 24-bit color, 16 million color palette, like it's never going to look this way. And so the palette enforces thematic coherence in a sense.
Yeah, I agree.
Like you would make sure that, you know, the silvery metallic stuff isn't slightly blue in some cases, or the pursuit to avoid banding being when you see the transition between colors in a or shades of a different same color. So for example, the yellow, there are too few of those, and then so the pursuit to avoid banding is actually sort of fostering creativity. So I would come up with ideas just to add some detail to hide the fact that I don't have enough colors to work with. So I really love working in an 8-bit palette. I have no ambition to do textures that are sort of full color, mm-hmm. full range. But yeah, and one trick that, and I have a YouTube video on this, but someone on the Doomworld forums, I think his name is Hidfan, Hidfan, he posted that you could do a lookup table added, like what's called a 3D LUT. You could add that as a layer effect in Photoshop, and you would construct this sort of lookup table so that it takes any incoming color and forces it into the closest equivalent Doom palette color.
Right.
And that means that I don't need, in Photoshop, which I still use for my texture work, I don't need to like convert it to indexed color to see the end result. Because right. when you do that, you lose the layers. So the fact that I can work with layers and use all of the tools at my disposal in Photoshop while seeing live exactly what it's going to come out as in the palette has been fantastic. So I love working that way. But yeah, it is tough. But and then it's obviously when you take something that has a bunch of like full range color and you're trying to tackle it into a very limited palette, there are ways to make that work. So dithering is one. So you sprinkle a little bit of noise on to, like, if you squint your eyes, it's going to look like the original color. But given that you can walk up so close to textures in Doom, they're so low resolution, especially now that, I mean, no one plays on 320 by 200 anymore. So that means the pixels get so big and dithering noise kind of sticks out to me. And a lot of the vanilla stuff also doesn't use dithering. There are some examples, I think, like the blood and nukage animated flats use dithering, for example. And like the first guy in Doom 2 uses dithering. And I think, well, E1M, episode 1 Sky also uses some dithering. But it's tastefully done and an exception. So I've tried very hard to not use dithering in OTEX. And that also helps establish the look. And you can have excellent results using dithering. So the Back to Saturn X textures from Essel uses a lot of dithering. But she's also altered the palette in such a way that it works better. Dithering works better when the palette is more muted. So mm-hmm. there is a little bit more dithering in Quake 2, for example, which has an exquisite palette. But for Doom, for the vanilla one, it doesn't quite work. And I decided early on that I wanted OTEX to be vanilla palette so that it could be combined with other stuff. So mm-hmm. that's what I'm sticking to.
It is interesting you talk about the how an 8-bit palette can help with theming, and maybe that constriction can help people in creating things that are maybe a little bit more cohesive. Because I do find that when I see new mappers come in and they immediately go into true color in UDMF mm-hmm. and similar ports, similar standards or whatever, I do notice that it you do end up with a lot of like just random use of color, I suppose, and it does yep. feel like you get very far away from Doom very quickly with true color.
Yeah, I think, I mean, creativity within constraints is so wonderful, and like having the constraints of Doom, it's just this, they serendipitously hit on this sort of perfect balance with Doom. Like, you can do so much, but it is at the same time so limited. And I think it's just this glorious balance that if you change that, if you change some parameters or remove some constraints, it isn't always for the better. Like, I've never done anything for UDMF. I've never used slopes in my life. Someone can surely do cool stuff with it, but I have no desire to do that. And also, like, being, you know, grown up on Doom.wad, I feel like that's a true experience. That's like the real deal. Mm-hmm. And now they're, you know, you don't need to worry about visplanes anymore because, oh Lord, was that a thing? Yeah. So, I mean, there are quality of life stuff and conveyors, obviously, and Voodoo also unlock this enormous world of opportunities. I kind of like the core vibe still. Mm-hmm. And that goes for the look as well. So I have pulled my hair yelling about the palette a lot through the years working on Otex, but I still wouldn't want it on any other way.
Yeah. And that blue range, you brought up how it's very oversaturated, but I think what I like about Doom is that it has a lot of vibrancy to it. Like, there's a lot of color in Doom when you compare it to a lot of other shooters, and especially games that came up around early 2000s era where everything was sort of brown and gray. When you compare,
I mean, Doom, yeah, that all started with Quake and it just got worse.
I've definitely talked about Quake's brownness, but
I've seen the video. Listeners to the pod should check out Nirvana's video on why Doom is better than Quake. It is very worthwhile.
But obviously, the whole video is ridiculous. Like, I think Quake's a good game. Don't get me wrong.
No, sure. But
a lot of it's very mean.
It's also a funny video. So if you enjoy this pod and you haven't watched that video, do yourself a... Yeah, check it.
Yeah, head on over to this exact channel. in terms of Otex, and then like needing, I suppose, something to show it off, when did Eve Eternity come into the picture?
I started approaching people about, like, I had sort of hit some sort of critical mass with the amount of content in Otex and figured, all right, I will eventually release this. I'm actually going to make it this time. Because I kept it secret for a very long time, but simply because I was so tired of, you know, committing to stuff and then fizzling out into nothing. But I hit a point where I was like, all right, there's a lot of good shit in here. I can tell that a lot of what I have in here is better than what, I mean, this is me tooting my own horn, but I just felt it was better than what I saw a lot of other people doing. I was like, no, this is good shit. This needs to be out in the world. And obviously then you want to have that stuff used in a good way by skilled people. So mostly I contacted people that I'd taken inspiration from. So, I contacted, you know, Ribbix and Dana, and I think Dana just replied to me saying I should never contact him again or something, like he didn't appreciate it at all.
Whoa.
I mean, we chatted since on like a stream or something, but he was like very dismissive. It was not a polite response. And like we lived like a kilometer apart or something. No, actually this is before I moved back to Sweden, but once I lived in Sweden, we lived very close to each other.
Okay, so you're gonna hear from me and Yukira in a second. And this is going to be a little addendum that we added after the fact regarding this Danny Babinga story. So, enjoy. So I messaged Danny regarding this supposed email, and he seems unconvinced that it was him. He's looked through his emails, and he's yet to fully get back to me, but he does not believe that this occurred.
And I looked through my emails and I'm just, so this is weird, I'm just finding one when he's like politely declining and wishing me good luck. But I was so sure it was him because he's like me, he's Swedish. So, and I remember it happening in Swedish. So who else would I have talked to Otex about in Swedish? Well, apparently not him, because I'm not finding the email. So I'm very, very sorry, but let's not get, you know, let the truth get in the way of a good story. Leave it in and add this apology that I have shitty memory and my cognitive abilities are declining due to old age, and someone probably told me to go fuck myself with regards to Otex, but not Dana. He made a level, or no, maybe it was Rubix, made a level with that name instead. Anyway,
it was Rubix.
It was Rubix. Sorry, Danet. Someone was not happy about being offered Otex, and I, through whatever dysfunction inside of my head, had attributed it to him incorrectly. So the culprit is still at large and may never get caught.
Yeah, well, Danny seemed dismayed that that you would think.
I feel horrible.
So he went through his emails and he was like, I don't think it was me.
Well, I'm laughing, but I feel horrible having accused him of this. Yeah. I don't know how it happened. Like, I feel so sure it was him. And again, we had like talked in chat on Twitch or whatever after, and everything's fine. There was no hard feelings. It's just that in retrospect, I thought it was funny that I was on my high horse about these textures and got rejected. But I was by someone, just not him, just someone else.
Evil Danny is out there somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. The one with the small beard. That's the one.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to record another addendum where Danny finds the email where he was really rude to you. And then he's like, actually, yeah, it was
me. And I take everything back.
Yeah, he's like, I remember this guy now, and I stand by what I said.
Yeah, and profess my aversion to him. Okay.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll see where this
yeah, we're recording this after the fact because, like any sort of podcaster with decent morals and some ambition, you actually fact check this particular thing. And I'm grateful because otherwise this accusation would just be out there and I would need to deal with it afterwards. Now at least I get a laugh about it. So thank you, apologies, etc. That's it.
That's all we got for you.
Back to the podcast we've already recorded.
Yeah, back to it. Please listen to the whole thing. That's my only request.
Maybe I'll say something else stupid towards the end. Don't miss it.
You never know. We'll find out later. Goodbye. Go listen to the podcast. Bye.
But I've never met him. Anyway, I contacted a lot of people and someone was like, well, this is nice. And like, Sverre Andre Kvenmo, if I pronounce it in Norwegian, the sound block of TNT fame, map 12 of Eternal Doom fame. He actually started building something. Being another old timer, I thought it was cool if he would do it, but he actually started building something with it, but I think it fizzled out. John van der Weken, that I mentioned before, he actually had a bunch of levels, 6 or 7 levels that were Otex based, but in sort of E1 otherwise in terms of gameplay and architecture, and they were vanilla, but he sort of dropped off the map. We're Facebook friends, so it seems like he's alive, but he stopped responding, and I think he just gave up on Doom and didn't want to bother. Mm-hmm. So there was a bunch of, like, I wanted stuff out there, but I couldn't get anyone to do it. So, I didn't want to cast the widest net. I would, like, contact one person, see how that went, and, you know, okay, no, maybe not. Contact someone else and, you know, give it some time, because people might be busy. Mm-hmm. And Skillsaw was like, oh, I got this other project that I'm wrapping up, so not right now. And then he sent me some screenshots of what turned out to be Ancient Aliens. Heard of it. So I had contacted him before Ancient Aliens was out, at least a year before. So it was, you know, when did it come out? 2015? So I probably contacted him in 14 then, mm-hmm. or something like that. Or is it 16? Never mind. Either way, I mean, then I was like, okay, time is ticking. Like, because I'd also decided for, you know, Doom's 25th birthday, like I wanted it out by then. That would be just a nice sort of milestone. And it was a fast approaching. Like, we had come into, you know, 2018, the year it was going to happen. And I was like, holy shit, I need someone to build with this. So I was looking through the screenshots thread on Doomworld. And I, you know, I'd seen some stuff by Dragonfly before, and he posted something. I was like, "Ah, oh, that looks really cool." So I contacted him in March of 2018, and he's like, "Oh shit, I'm gonna make a megawatt with this, just right away." And he sure did. And so that's how Eve Eternity happened.
Hmm. Well, that Danny thing is baffling to me because he's a very personable guy, but
yeah, sure. No, and I don't know if I like got it on a bad day or something, but and I don't remember the exact phrasing, so apologies, Danny, if this is wrong, but it was basically like, please don't contact me again. That was sort of this spirit.
Maybe he, well, I know like, that okay. He's like been hideously busy life-wise for quite a long time, so it might, maybe he just came off as dismissive.
Maybe it was that, or maybe like I had maybe it was that I had sent one email and didn't get a response, and I sent another, and he was like, "Shut up, dude!" Like something like that.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. Yeah. Who knows?
And you know, it's all good. Like, there's no bad blood at all. It was just funny. Because I obviously thought like, "Oh, I got some hot shit. They're all gonna want this," and then I just get rejected in the most brutal way. I was like, what the
Danny was pissed,
what am apparently. I doing here? So but, you know, Josh Dragonfly, he certainly embraced it, so here we are.
Yeah, and I guess I was wondering, I think I've actually sort of I've at least seen you talk about this a little bit before and maybe spoken to you on Twitch or something vaguely about it, but I was wondering like how it's felt seeing your textures used in so many like newer Doom projects, and it's kind of become like the new staple texture pack, like CC4 used to be, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I want, like, CC4 text was a thing that I wanted to replace. Like, that was an actual goal of mine. Mm-hmm. And maybe not replace, because if you want vanilla derived assets and edits, then that's still that. I mean, there's some 32 and 32 or whatever pack that might be even more extensive, but like I wanted, like that was ubiquitous in a way that was starting to be annoying. Like there was too much stuff using that, and yeah, it was all starting to look the same, and I kind of wanted OTEX to be like the new standard. And in a way it has become the new standard, and it's obviously incredibly gratifying. I can just open Twitch Doom 2 and at any given time, and there's a good likelihood that there's something using OTEX being streamed. Like, it's, there's so much. And for a while I was planning to like keep maintain an index of stuff that used OTEX, but that became impossible like immediately. So it is enormously gratifying that, you know, my almost lifelong passion for Doom has eventually allowed me to contribute something so significant back to the community, also in the light of my struggle with Mapper's Block and not feeling like I had stuff in me that I couldn't sort of bring to life in terms of mapping.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's super rewarding. I'm mm-hmm. so excited for it, and this means I probably will never stop. I will probably always keep twiddling with OTEX now, because I crave the sort of gratification of praise from strangers on the internet.
Well, I was gonna, I will poke you a little bit here, because I suppose what I was looking for was, I remember vaguely having a conversation with you about, you were sort of seeing a lot of newer people use your textures, and you were worried about the oversaturation.
Yeah, that is very true, and there has been oversaturation for a while, like in the first 2 years maybe. Mm-hmm. It that was a real concern. It has mellowed out, and I mean, I've written in my log here that you didn't use OTEX for Fractured Worlds, so you're on my naughty list.
You're wrong, actually. But I used exactly one OTEX texture.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
It was the purple beams of white. The little I used those.
But that is actually good, because it can't, like, while I derive great pleasure from seeing it used so extensively, especially in the pretty stuff, because Lord knows there's some ugly stuff out there that uses OTEX. Unavoidable when there's so much variety. Mm-hmm. But like, as much as that gives me pleasure, it is also good that it isn't the only thing in existence, that people still use, you know, IWAD stuff, and still use like Plutonia-esque stuff, and still lean on the sort of aesthetic that was established, I guess, mostly by Sunlust. So I think that's all good. And there's starting to be a few now that either combine OTEX with other stuff, like it's a 50-50, and I enjoy seeing that, seeing people sort of pick out the the stuff they like the most and not being sort of uncritically taking it whole cloth. But and then there's also those where people like make their own edits and actually like, oh, I need this vine on this other one. Mm-hmm. So and I mentioned Floatran before. I've been playing Delirium now, which is in beta still. And I think he's sort of it's on hiatus because he's working on some actual game of his own. But that Delirium by Floatran, oh man, that is probably the most ego stroke boner I've gotten from seeing Otex use in anything. Like such a variety, and there's been a lot of incredible stuff using Otex.
Yeah,
that just blows my mind how people are able to use it. But I think Delirium is my current favorite. The tech bases are incredible, but there's so much variety. He uses so many different themes, and it's all so coherent. And it's like, and obviously combined with amazing level design. So just getting to see those things is just so rewarding. I love seeing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I have something that may never see the light of day. Like, it's fairly likely that it won't see the light of day, but I hope it does one day. But I have been playing around with Otex a little bit. I will say that much.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, who knows if that will ever come to fruition.
Well, maybe you just need the new stuff in Otex 2.
Otex 2.
Maybe that's what's gonna tip you over. Yeah. At some you know, someday. It's in the works. One thing I do want to say on that is so Darkening Episode 2 textures, everything is entirely from scratch. Like the sky is 3D rendered mountains and 3D rendered clouds. Like I built it all in 3D and rendered it and palletized it. Mm-hmm. But being that Doom has this sort of history, even from Gothic textures, and I mentioned A Delusion and him sort of Frankensteining stuff together from other games, etc., that has always been sort of how things are done in Doom. And even id used, like, they scanned photos from books they found to do, like, do switches and stuff. They didn't draw everything from scratch. Yeah. So that's sort of been the spirit of Doom. So for Otex, I was like, fuck it. I'm not going to be mega strict about this. I will sort of borrow a thing here or there. And so there are some like faces and stuff of like monster skull stuff that I'm not good at drawing. I've done some of them, but not all of them, that I just grabbed off the internet. But I want to do away with those for Otex 2. I want to make it so that, you know, you could theoretically build a commercial game using these.
Right.
Not that anyone will, but like I want to like come clean because, and also very inspired by Back to Saturnix textures by Essel, that's all entirely original. Mm-hmm. And it's also funny. And she mentioned this when she was on the pod that she was very inspired by Darkening Episode 2 textures, and I was obviously super inspired by Back to Saturn Night textures for Otex, but I didn't know that she had originally been inspired by me when I got inspired by her. So it is this sort of human centipede of inspiration.
Well, that is one way to put it.
Ouroboros of inspiration.
Yeah, that might be a bit nicer.
Yeah, that's going to dodge the obscenity filters better.
Yeah. Well, I don't think YouTube's robot is looking for a human centipede of creativity.
Mostly. A missed opportunity.
Yeah, I do. I really love Essel's texture work.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, that's why Fractured Worlds uses a lot of Essel stuff, because Rubik's had a bunch of stuff that he hadn't used for Stardate, and he threw the textures my way, and I was like, hell yeah. A whole bunch of free Essel stuff.
Yeah. And with the release of Back to Center Next Episode 3, the textures will be free for other people to use. I believe. I'm not speaking for her, but yeah.
Yeah, I think
so. So that's going to be a really good option. Now, obviously, that's in a custom palette, so it's not as interchangeable with other stuff as
a very custom palette. Like,
yeah.
That is not something you can plug and play, let me tell you. That palette is
for sure.
If you put another texture from another one into that palette, much like Ancient Aliens,
It will
come up as a blob. So.
Yeah. But, I mean, people will find a way to navigate that shortly. So I think it's going to be good that's another sort of high-quality pack that provides a lot of opportunity for mappers to use. So because the sort of update of the aesthetics and the upkeep of the sense of novelty in Doom, I think, is important for its longevity. So yeah. I think that it's really good that that keeps happening. And I really, really wish more people would put in the effort to make nice looking textures. Mm-hmm. There is sadly a bit of a dearth of that. If you look at like post your textures thread on Doomworld, like I've been trying every now and then to give hints at people of how to think about making textures so that they end up with better results. But oh man, there's seems to be largely in vain. It isn't that hard. Like it doesn't take some mega talent. I'm just stubborn. And just make something simple. Like just make one. You don't need to like reproduce the breadth of OTEX. Just make some stuff. That's how everyone starts. But look at it and ask yourself if it could be better. Like, or if there's something else that is better. And if so, why? And then you change it. That's it. Mm-hmm. But that seems to be a very difficult concept for people to grasp. Like so many people are making levels and they apply that mentality to making levels, like pushing themselves and trying to be methodical about improving, etc. But what about, you know, graphics? Like why is it so difficult to do the same with graphics? Anyway, I genuinely wish more people would do stuff like that. And mm-hmm. if I ever have the time, I'll make more like video tutorials that you discussed with Arlene. I think is a very important point that there are areas of sort of blind spots on the Doom creator content side of things that you could do more for. So more tutorials for textures, I definitely think is useful.
Yeah, I mean, the most I've done is recolors, which I just do directly.
Which is a fine start.
Because
Which is a fine start. You get accustomed to, you know, the palette, and you can understand what color and shade does to the vibe of a texture. You will learn from everything you do, but there's a lot of stuff. Like, try to reproduce something from the iWad or something from OTEX, from that matter. Just try to make something similar and then figure out, you know, what is different about yours, what's better or worse about it, and, you know, improve. It's fun, I promise. You don't need to do it for 20 years to get something worthwhile.
Or just wait for OTEX 2, which is what I'll be doing.
Sorry, I think I lost you there. The audio clipped.
Oh, I said just wait for OTEX 2 instead.
Yeah, any year now, or 18. But yeah. I am. So it's ever since 1.1, which is the current release of OTEX, I've also become a dad. So my life and availability of spare time looks very different. So it is extremely slow progress. But I haven't stopped. That's basically what I can say.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear. I did want to jump back to Eve Eternity. And I suppose the big question for me with your map 32, is how much of that was built around showcasing OTEX?
Not that much, actually, because I started that level kind of late. In the process, I started seriously trying to make a level for the project, I think, in August. And it obviously came out, the initial release, in early December. Mm-hmm. And Josh had started Eve Eternity in March. So there were a bunch of months where, you know, people had been, especially him, because he made like 24 maps or 19 on his own and 5 collaborative, I think, for Eve Eternity. So, and he streamed a lot of it, streamed his mapping, and I would like be in the chat and he would like request a texture and I would fix it for him live. But so I had seen my textures put to amazing use for months already. So I didn't feel that pressure at all. So I figured it was other things I strived for, I think. So I settled on, you know, a fairly, sort of anonymous gray for most of the structures, and, you know, obviously I wanted to make it look good, but it wasn't like flexing the textures wasn't the core part of it. I just wanted to make a cool level,
right? And I mean, it was such a large map. Was that the intention from the beginning? Was that like, did you
know
it
well
and...
no? both yes and no. Like, I wanted, so, and I've written about this before, but I mean, I realized it was going to be my comeback to Doom leveling, Doom mapping after 18 years. And I kind of wanted to make an impact with that and not just, you know, here's a something I farted out in an afternoon. Mm-hmm. So obviously I'd sort of, you know, my old, the old demon of high ambitions was rearing its head again when I was mapping. But I'd learn a lot, like new tools, new editors. Holy shit, the editors are good now. And, you know, all of that. Last time I did something, it was like Water Author or something. No, but I've done right. some stuff in Doom Builder, but I didn't know any of the cool stuff. So I learned all of that from Dragonfly streams, building Eternity levels. So I wanted to put that to use. It was more me playing with the new tools and, you know, playing with the textures too, of course. And then using some old scraps of stuff I'd done. And I had all had visions sort of what I wanted to do, like some industrial dilapidated thing in a canyon with lava. That was part of it. I knew ever since Darkening Episode 2, Map 12, that I really loved the sort of intricate, interconnected, nonlinear, complex feel of things. Like it needed to feel like a place. I wanted to feel like, oh, I'm in this place, not just like I'm playing this level. Like I wanted to be to feel like a location. And then I was just slapping stuff together, and panic increased gradually, then more because the deadline was fast approaching. So it was mad scramble to get it together. Dragonfly did the auto map cleanup, which is a heroic task because of the amount of lines. Yeah. Bull of elementalism fame he recorded a video when he played an early version and sort of spoke about his feedback as he was playing, and that was incredibly helpful. That was the level would not have been the same without that. So I guess also one thing that I wanted it to be is when I in early 94, when I got Doom and opened that up, it was this feeling of like, how can this even exist? And it was so intimidating. And so like, how can, like, well, I keep dying. Well, part of it was with 2 frames per second and I didn't know where the strafe keys were, but there was just these emotions about the sort of the overwhelming feeling of just this enormity of this world that was mine to explore. And I felt like I wanted to convey that to another generation, but how do you do that in an old game? And the only way I could think of was to just make this monstrous level that sort of tried to overwhelm the player. And the level also deliberately is very oppressive at the start and at the beginning, or beginning and the end, I mean, while it sort of relents in the middle and there's, you know, plenty of health and ammo. You shouldn't really run out. As long as you're careful, you'll be fine. Where it instead focuses on an adventure, because if it's pushing you towards death constantly for something that long, that's just going to drain anyone. Now it drains a lot of people anyway. I found recently an old screenshot of Mr. Meaner, and when he had finished it on Twitch, and his pose in his chair as he's watching the score screen is a thing to behold. I think I took a year off his life with that level.
It is a long one. It's a bit polarizing, I guess, due to its length. But
it is, and rightfully so. And then it is tucked away in slot 32 for a reason. Maybe it could have been a standalone release. I obviously did not adhere to some sort of overall theme of Eviternity. I just went hog wild and just threw it all in there. But overall, it's been super positive. A lot of people like it a lot. In Decino's playthrough, I think in part because he hadn't played that many PWAs at the time, he calls it the best level he's ever played, which obviously was an incredible thing to hear. Mm-hmm. I don't think he would say that today, but you know, stuff like that really made me feel good. And getting that sort of reception to it made me sort of rejuvenated my interest in staying with this, and obviously the reception to Otex as well sort of just cemented that, you know what, Doom is going to remain a part of my life, as it has been for so long already. That's just the way it is. And I should never be ashamed of that. I should never be like, oh, now I'm in my mid-40s and have a family and I still enjoy this game from 30 years ago. That's fine. You know, it's okay. I get a lot of pleasure out of this. I get to exercise my creativity within this. I learn things. Like as a kid, I could count in my head in hexadecimal because I was poking around in Doom stuff. That forced me to learn to count hexadecimal in my head. Like I've gotten so much from Doom over the years. I'm really good at Photoshop now, just because I've been doing textures for 20 years. So like, there's so much value in this, even though it's not monetary. And the reception of Eternity Map 32 was a big part of that. That realization that, you know what, this is where I belong. Now I'm gonna probably continue to release things at like an Olympic pace. Well, that means I would have released something last year. It's now 5 years. This year's 5 years since Eternity first came out. But I'll make another level. There's stuff cooking. It's just I'm in no rush. I'm never going to be a high output person.
Yeah.
But I guess when I output something, it's going to be on a high level. So that's the compromise. And someone else can be the factory.
Well, you did sort of tell me offhandedly that you had something big in the works that was quite secretive. I'm guessing that's not OTX 2, since you brought that up. But
OTX 2 is going to be used for something. So obviously this time around, there's no shortage of people being interested in doing stuff with my texture. So that's a luxury I have. So there's something really, really cool being done. So we'll see when that comes out. But yeah, so I continue to be involved.
Cool. Well, that sounds exciting. And I may constantly push you on what it is to find out before everyone else.
I am not at the wheel of this. I'm the texture guy on this, so someone else. It's not my decision. The marketing plan is in different hands, so I will. My lips are sealed.
Well, there you go. Even I couldn't get it out of him, guys. So, luck.
Even this expert interviewer
exactly could
not elicit a response.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Frost versus Nixon over here. So to the final very exciting question, and I know that you have sort of said throughout that you're more of an aesthetics guy, and so maybe this may be based entirely on aesthetics, but. What is your favorite Doom monster and why?
The correct answer is Archvile, but mine will be the Imp.
Oh, it's a good one.
Because E1M1, the fireball glides through the room diagonally from above. Oh man, that was like, holy shit, how does that even happen? Because recall that before then it was hit scan in Wolfenstein.
Mm-hmm.
And sprite projectiles in 2D games. To have that sort of float through space and I could move and see the parallax as it glides past me, and also that it wasn't sort of linear, it was coming at an angle from above. That just, and then the sounds of the Imp, their ambient gurgling, when we give them with the rocket, or when you just their various death sounds. Oh, man, it's so good. The Imp, it's really, really great. The one thing I will say, the Imp is entirely hand-drawn. That's hand-pixeled. It's one of the monsters that is not derived from photographic sources. But that also means they deliberately drew the anus on the Imp corpse.
That's so true.
Now you know that.
Yeah, that is interesting.
So I would say the Imp.
No model.
Yeah.
Yeah, no model for the Imp.
Exactly. But so in Eternity Map 32... and ignores this. There's all these imps on cliffs because I love rocketing imps and just having them there as a first shooting gallery and just plopping them off. And also getting a bunch of fireballs coming down at you at an angle. That's actually from my experience in E1M1. That's why they're there.
Full circle from your first experience of Doom and the big redemption arc with Eternity 32.
Exactly.
Beautiful. A beautiful tale of Doom. For sure.
that hopefully continues.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like...
I mean, there's obviously new generations coming in. I mean, you yourself are the sort of another generation than I am with regards to Doom, and there's more coming now, and, you know, it just continues, and I think that's just so wonderful to see. Because my relationship to Doom is obviously that of someone who was around when it came out, and how that made me feel, and how that impacted me. But the fact that this game can grab people as much now, when, you know, you have real-time ray tracing in Cyberpunk 2077, and then people still like, no, I'm going to just play Doom and spend hours every week on Doom. I think that's fantastic. And so, may it never die.
Yeah, and I think, like you were saying with, like, the tutorials for making textures and how we need to sort of get more of that kind of stuff in, I do think, like, bolstering, like, these niche elements, like, niche creative elements of Doom is actually a really important thing to keep the community going, because I think there are so many aspects of Doom where, like, it's a lot easier to do the game development aspects of making things for Doom than it is for other games. Like, if you want to make textures for Doom, it's easier than, you know, making textures in Unreal or something.
Yeah.
If you want to make maps, it's a hell of a lot easier than making maps in a new engine. You know, MIDI and is easier to work with.
I did Quake maps for a while. I did even Quake 3 maps, and it's just, holy shit, that's annoying.
Yeah.
So it's just back to Doom.
Yeah. So I do think, like, fostering these niche elements will definitely help keep Doom going and keep it interesting for new people coming in who maybe want to dabble in game development and making their own stuff. I think it's just such an important aspect of the game.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. Really interesting conversation. I feel like I went on a journey with you from these early days of Doom and hearing about all this stuff.
Journeyman of Doom.
Yeah, yeah. It was really a pleasurable experience going through the epic that is Yukiro's Doom life. So thanks a lot.
There's a content desert in the middle where nothing happens, but then the oasis shows up. So good.
But then light.
Well, thanks for having me. This was great.
Yeah. Agreed. And thanks everybody for listening. I'll be back next time with another guest, a mystery to both you and me. See you next time. And goodbye again, Yukiro.
Bye-bye.